A group of men crosses a field in a tight group. Geoffrey Reeve presents, starring James Mason and Edward Fox, The Shooting Party, based on the novel by Isabel Colgate. Starring Dorothy Tootin, John Gielgud, Gordon Jackson, Cheryl Campbell, Robert Hardy, and Aaron Ipale. Also starring Joris Stuck, Rebecca Sayre, Sarah Bedell, with Rupert Fraser as Lionel and Judy Bowker as Olivia. Having peeled off from the rest of the group, a lone figure stands motionless at the centre of the field. Music composed and conducted by John Scott. Screenplay by Julian Bond. Produced by Geoffrey Reeve and directed by Alan Bridges. Autumn 1913.
Life is so extraordinarily pleasant for those of us who are fortunate enough to have been born in the right place. Ought it to be so pleasant? And for so few of us? And isn't there sometimes a kind of satiety about it all? And at the same time, greed? We seem to have become money mad. There's never been so much gambling, speculating, fortune hunting. People say the military regime in Germany is going to insist on a trial of strength sooner or later. And supposing it did come, some great trial, might it not cleanse us of our materialism, our cynicism, our lax, lazy hypocrisies, make us gird our sinews and find simplicity again? And then, should we not be fitter afterwards to make a better world? For that must be what we're here for, to leave the world a better place than we found it.
Better be ready, Mr. Stephen, sir.
Yes, yes, quite right, Percy.
Men beating sticks against trees send up a flurry of birds in a forest.
Over there! Over on the right!
In a clearing, a second group, made up mostly of men wearing tweed jackets, knee-length boots and flat caps, lets off a barrage of almost random shotgun fire into the air. As a pheasant tumbles towards the forest floor, a man's head emerges from the undergrowth. Spying the shooting party, the man, Tom Harker, sets a trap in a hedge. Alternating between two shotguns, which are being constantly rotated by a loader, Lord Gilbert Hartlip brings down a pheasant. Meanwhile, Sir Randolph Nettleby prepares to fire his own weapon.
Hold out there, Sir Randolph!
Lionel Stevens' loader consults a notebook.
A 62 pheasant, two hares and a woodcock today, sir.
Look here, Percy. I don't mind you keeping my score, but you'd better not let Sir Randolph hear you. Our host considers it unsporting, which of course it is.
Gilbert's loader.
71 pheasant, 3 woodcock, 2 hare, my lord.
Which puts us comfortably ahead of Mr. Stevens, I fancy.
Ahead, my lord, but I don't know about comfortably.
The party begins drifting away from the forest clearing. Now, a motor car carrying a man and a woman comes across Lionel as he walks towards a large, stately home, reading a book.
Hello. Isn't that your pal, Lionel Stevens?
Buried in a book, as always.
Hello, Bob.
Afternoon, Lionel.
Hello.
Olivia.
Bob and Olivia park at the front door, just as another car carrying Randolph and a group of women pulls up.
Give us a good first day, Bob.
I'm desolate, Randolph. But one can't refuse
to be one's brother's best man.
Especially when he's gone for his age.
Never mind. You're forgiven if you brought something dashing for the fancy dress party. You know, Lady Hardy.
Yes, of course I do, Andy. Oh, Lord, Minnie, I'm afraid dressing up isn't really my style.
You're as bad as Randall.
She looks nicely today.
I don't doubt Olivia has bought some ravishing confection.
Another of your Greek classics?
No, no.
Ruskin! I love Ruskin. Even when he's talking nonsense, I love the sound of it.
Lionel gives Olivia his book.
What?
Thank you.
Hopkins, I must have bowed for Sir Reuben. Lady Netherby.
Thousand
Olivia,
thanks.
Olivia, my dear. Come along.
Certainly.
I hope we're forgiven for arriving late, Sir Randolph.
Seems that everything will depend on your turnout tomorrow night, Olivia.
Oh, let me see. You know Lord and Lady Hartlib, don't you?
Yes, of course. Hello, Gilbert.
Gilbert.
Olivia.
Hello, Bob.
Aline.
And Count Tibor Rakisse, on a visit to us from Hungary.
Oh.
What's it? Rakisse. Lord and Lady Lilburn. How do you do?
Of
course, you must know our daughter-in-law, Ida, and her children, Cecily and Marcus.
Hello.
Yes, yes, we met. At Henley, wasn't it?
Well, we must go up and get changed, and I expect you'd like to unpack.
I'll get Rogers to send someone to bring your things in from the car.
Randolph finishes wiping down his hand and leaves the room, followed by Bob and Olivia. Outside, two young people enter a courtyard where they meet the gamekeeper, Glass.
No, you're not having any more.
Please, Flo, just one more.
Hello, Flo.
Mum said to tell you Dad's back is bad again. He'll not be able to beat for you tomorrow.
Oh, darn it, that back of his. Can't Dr. West do nothing for it, then?
Oh, what's this?
Mum sent them. Lardy cakes.
Oh, that's nice. And when he's done eating, then. Be a good girl and look in on Tom Harker and tell him I'll need him as a beater tomorrow. 8 o'clock sharp. Batty Clump.
You said you wouldn't have Tom Harker again. Not after the last time you caught him.
I don't like it. Why should I give him a free look at where the best game's to be had? But it can't be helped. He knows what he's doing. And I'll need a reliable stop if John's not with us. Besides, Tom Harker only poaches for the pot.
Tom plunges a blade into a hare.
Oh, good evening, my friend.
Good evening to you, sir.
I wonder if you'd be good enough to direct me to the Nettleby Arms.
I'll point you in the right direction if you'll walk with me a little way.
That'd be very kind.
Cornelius Cardew notices Tom's limp.
Oh, I see you. You've got a bad leg. Is that a consequence of the South African war?
Oh, bless you, no, sir. It was a man-trap that did it.
Good God, don't they know it's illegal?
Ah, bear no grudge. Come on. The gamekeeper was doing his duty as he saw it.
A duty? To trap a fellow human being in a diabolical contraption that might cripple him for life? And all to ensure there'll be a few more poor birds for someone else to murder?
You might say so, in a sense.
Beasts are our brothers and the birds are sisters. All we need for our daily sustenance are the fruits of the field and the orchard.
They do say the Lord will provide.
Will they be out tomorrow for their purposes of massacre?
Oh, I couldn't say, sir. It's nothing to me, the pastimes of the upper classes.
Bob.
That silly ass Matthews. He's left half my things behind.
What a nuisance. But you look very nice.
I've got the wrong studs and things on.
No one could possibly guess.
No, they're too smart. It's frankly bad form. I look as if I was going to some damn ball.
Oh, Bob.
That's all very well. You can dismiss these things if you like. But they are part of the structure of our lives if we lose respect for them.
He opens the bedroom door and uses it to fan the fire.
We lose respect for ourselves.
My self-respect is not in the slightest bit connected with your shirt studs. But what you mean is that I can afford to be frivolous because I am sustained and maintained by you and the position you confer on me by making me your wife. All I can say is It would be far better, for instance, that a gentleman should mow his own fields than ride over other people's.
You're trying to provoke me. But I shall not rise. Who is this ape, anyway? John Ruskin. There you are, then. Art and life are two different things, as I believe he found out when he tried marriage. Who gave you this rubbish?
Lionel Stevens was looking at it today, and he gave it to me when I said I liked Ruskin.
A monocle drops from Bob's eye as he raises his eyebrows and looks at her.
Good man, Stevens.
He gets up and crosses the room. Meanwhile, Lionel's sitting at a writing desk when a bird flutters up to a window and distracts him. Screwing up the piece of paper he's been writing on, he throws it away. Outside, Tom escorts Cornelius into the village.
This is where I'll be going to my poor residence.
If you go right up to the crossroads, then there'll be arms 100 yards or so to your left. Come on, Sam, punch!
Oh, by the way, sir, let me give you one of my leaflets. One moment.
He reaches into a satchel.
Here we are. I can see that you're a fellow spirit. Good day to you, sir.
Tom looks slightly baffled as he accepts the leaflet and heads off across a graveyard.
Hello, bloody spirit indeed. Bloody lunatic. Murder indeed. Bloody balmy, if you ask me.
Flo drops out of a tree behind him.
What's this then?
I've a message from Mr. Glass. Will you beat for him tomorrow? 8 o'clock sharp. Batty Clump.
Mr. Glass wants me to beat, does he? Who's fallen out?
My dad.
Has he?
It's his back.
He hands her Cornelius's leaflet.
What do you think of that then?
The rights of animals.
Rights of animals, indeed. Animals haven't got rights, have they?
Shouldn't think so. I don't know.
Except to hunt and be hunted. Here, then, look what I've got. Licorice. That's for being a good girl and waiting so long.
Thank you, Mr. Harker.
Sniffing the licorice and grimacing, Flo throws it into the bushes before running off. At the house, a footman's laying out a suit on the bed in Lionel's room, when he looks down and notices two halves of a letter in the waste paper basket beside the writing desk. He picks them up and reads.
Hello, John. It's a long, cold haul to that bathroom.
I think that's everything, sir. I'll empty this and fetch it back for you right away.
No hurry. I've done all the writing I'm going to do this evening.
A maid.
The way she talks about Lady Artlip, that Hortense. I couldn't tell you some of the things she says, miss. I couldn't really.
No, and I should think you'd better not. Is she a flirt? French maids in plays always are.
The way she was behaving with John yesterday, I could have killed him.
Well, what you'll have to do is marry John quickly, and then you can keep him in order.
Miss, we couldn't. Not yet. Not without any prospects.
Oh, John won't be a footman forever.
He did think of applying for a job as a valet for Mr. Stevens. He thinks Mr. Stevens is a very nice gentleman.
I do too. Very nice. And yet, in a funny way, he's so nice and so good at everything and so kind and elegant and clever. I wonder if he's quite real sometimes.
Oh, I think Count Macassia is more your sort of gentleman, miss. He's more lively, if you know what I mean.
Ellen, you're just saying that to find out what I think about him.
Miss, please sit down.
Of course he's more my sort of gentleman. But he's nearly 30, you know.
Is he? Never guessed it. He's quite well preserved, if you know what I mean.
I shall have to marry him then. And you and John will have to come to Hungary as valet and lady's maid. And we'll gallop across the great Hungarian snow-covered plain from one glittering palace to another.
Oh, never really fancied snow.
You are very particular.
Cicely, how often have I told you?
Please, don't borrow things of mine without asking.
There we are, miss. Good evening, milady. Good luck, miss.
You shouldn't encourage her, you know.
I don't need to. She does very well on her own.
A little girl runs her hands along the top of a glass case housing a collection of rocks. Then she wanders over to a desk where Randolph's mulling over what to write in a book open in front of him. When he barely looks up at her, the bored-looking girl moves over to a tiger skin rug in front of a fireplace and sits down next to Randolph's hound. As she begins to stroke her, Randolph looks over.
Don't fawn on her too much. It insults her.
You're always writing in that big brown book, Grandpapa.
It's my game book. Well, part of it's my game book, part of it's my thoughts. It's not a bad idea to get into the habit of writing down one's thoughts. It saves one having to bother other people with them.
I hate writing.
That's because you're not very good at it. Very few people enjoy doing what they're not very good at.
Randolph puts pen to paper.
My wife and I are very fond of each other. But she cares for society more than I do.
Sicily.
I have to cover my legs with powder. It's the only way.
And lie on my back with my legs in the air. And then my maid and I have to pull as hard as we possibly can for hours and hours.
Can it be worth this agony?
Oh, yes. They look wonderful when they're on. I feel tremendously proud of myself in them.
What are you talking about, Sicily?
My new hunting boots.
Oh, yes. They can be agony.
What a boring conversation.
Randolph.
Is the Israelite not amongst us?
Oh, no, he got his feet wet falling through some ditch, so I persuaded him to let me send Hopkins up to him with a mustard bath. You know how comforting he would be.
Well, of course, if a fellow will come out shooting inadequately shot...
He was not inadequately shot. He was shot the same as everyone else. I particularly noticed.
We don't want too many people about with imagination and all that rubbish.
Of course, the dawn in the high Alps. It's a miraculous sight.
Oh, I should love to see.
No, there's absolutely nothing in it.
I don't know what you're referring to, I'm sure, but I can guess it's some kind of wickedness.
Not wicked to speculate now, is it?
Adjusting his white bow tie in the reflective metal of a suit of armour, a man in his 40s with combed back brown hair turns and heads upstairs to join the party.
A thousand apologies for being late.
My dear friend, I'm sure it was Hopkins' fault. You can be a dreadful bully. Now, I don't think you know our neighbours, Harry and Mildred Stamp. Sir Reuben and Hergesheimer.
Goodness. Well, I've heard so much about you that I feel I know you.
Dear lady, you're flattering me.
Sir. Good evening. Glass of sherry, wine, Hergesheimer?
A thousand thanks. Before my mishap, I thought again today how perfect your coverts are. As good, in my opinion, as Sandringham or Holcomb, though on a smaller scale, of course.
We copied them. Straight copy.
I didn't realize that. It's very interesting.
Almost bankrupting the estate in the process. Mildred, there's something I've been wanting to ask you. Come. You remember we came to Seven Cottages to
dinner? Sandringham. We were there twice. A long time ago.
Dinner is served, milady.
Thank you, Rogers. Sir Reuben, would you like to escort Mildred into dinner?
Nothing will give me greater pleasure.
Finding a partner to link arms with, the other guests follow Reuben and Mildred into the next room. Dressed in their finest evening wear, they enter a lavish dining room, crossing a marble floor to a long, immaculately laid out dining table. Under the warm glow of a burning fire and countless candles, they each find their place and sit down. Watching them from the corner of the room, a duck flaps its wings.
Oh, do look!
Dear.
Oh, how beautiful!
Rogers, I think we have a need for Master Osbert.
Too divine.
It's no use trying to catch it. We'd best wait for Osbert.
What a naughty boy. Oh, I'm so sorry, Belmare.
Nonsense, dear, but I think Mark is right. We ought to wait for Osborne. If we startle it, it might fly around and break something.
I do believe it's thinking.
I hope she doesn't come to any sudden decisions.
A young boy runs in and picks up the duck.
Osbert, wait!
You might at least apologize to Granny.
I'm sorry, Granny.
Never mind, dear. Rogers, I think it's safe to serve dinner now.
A wild duck is an unusual pet. How'd you come by her?
I found her on the river last spring. She'd lost her mother.
A mere chick, then?
She was only about 4 days old, I think.
My dear boy, won't she fly away?
Oh, she does. She goes down to the river with the other ducks. But she comes back at night, and sometimes in the daytime. That's why I never know when she's coming back, you see. And then she comes to look for me.
You'd best hang on to her on the last day, young sir, for if she's with the wild ducks, she'll be for it. Isn't that so, Randall?
So keep her in there, Norris. Don't forget.
Do you hear that, duck? If you're out there on the last day, flying over me, I can tell you, you haven't a hope. Bang, bang. And it will all be over.
If you kill her, I will kill you.
Osbert?
Oh, you will you? And how do you propose to do that, may I ask?
I will kill you by prayer.
Osbert takes his duck and leaves.
Tell me, Mr. Stevens, which sport do you excel at?
Billiards. Billiards.
That's a good one.
Tricky
games, isn't it? One would have thought you'd say shooting after the showing you made today.
Well, one would be foolish, Lady Hartland, to claim prowess in that direction when in the company of the finest shot in England.
Very civil.
And it's because of the rhythm of the sentences more than because of what we see. Just as I thought it would be. Like music. Art makes us better, don't you think?
Meanwhile, carrying a lantern to a desk, John's all alone as he sits down and begins to read Lionel's torn letter.
My dear, I couldn't look at you when you smiled. Did you notice? There is a certain smile you have which I cannot meet. Not because it dazzles me, although it is dazzling, but because it is so innocent. You are truth because you are beauty. Or beauty because you are truth. And you cannot stop me dying for you. Although I would much rather live for you, if you would let me.
I hope you'll find this port to your liking.
If it's as good as the shooting you're giving us, I for one shan't complain.
I understand you're making a name for yourself at the bar, Stevens.
Thank you. But it's a slow process.
Have you ever thought of going into politics?
Yes, and decided it's not my style.
You could never sit down on your estate as I do, could you, Randolph?
Each to his own, Randolph.
Isn't it time you were putting down some roots, Hagershammer? The thought of all those millions going to charity for want of an heir is almost more than I can bear.
My problem is that if I had a son and heir, I'm not so sure that I know how I would wish him to behave. Should he totally assimilate himself into your society? Or should he remember his ancestors in the Polish ghetto?
Well, don't take too long making up your mind. If the landowning class goes, everything goes.
What do you say, Lionel?
I don't know. I think an age, perhaps even a civilization, is coming to an end.
I wouldn't agree with you there.
I believe it to be true. If you take away the proper function of the aristocracy, what can it do but play games too seriously? It happened at the end of feudalism, and it's happening now. I must write a pamphlet about it. Private circulation. Decently printed, and so forth.
Death, disease, and dentistry, Grandfather.
What's that?
Subjects that are forbidden at table in this family.
Aline to Olivia.
And how long have you had Lionel Stevens under your spell, my dear?
I think you must be mistaken.
Oh, don't worry. I've set my cap at Sir Reuben and his millions.
Is this the book you wanted, Olivia?
Yes, I think it is. Thank you. What a competitive pair you are, you and your husband.
Gilbert? Competitive? Doesn't even join in the game.
It was sport I was referring to in his case.
Oh, sport? Sport doesn't interest me at all. Although, of course, one likes a man to be good at it.
Then you could hardly have made a better choice of husband.
Well, one would think so.
But, you know, something very odd was happening today. Somebody was actually out to beat him. I mean, your inamorata.
What do you mean?
Everybody wants to beat the champion.
I mean, our young friend's mind doesn't work like that. Even with the madness of love running in his veins to shine in front of her. Why do you think men do these things? That's so, isn't it, Sir Reuben? Men do acts of valor to win the hearts of women, isn't that so?
What other reasons could there be?
A deed of valor for any man is to partner my wife at bridge. I did it once, 30 years ago. I haven't touched the card since. But I can see by the look in her eye that someone's going to have to do it. The bridge fever is upon her. Well, we have one expert. Yeah, I know.
You're too kind, sir. Uh-huh.
Well, one or two brothers of bridge would be nice. Bob?
Yes, of course.
Oh, come on, you two. Let's go and play the gramophone. Try that new dance.
Dance?
Oh, anything that word games.
Gilbert steps over to Lionel.
Shall we put your fame at billiards to the test?
Yes. Yes, why not?
No, I'm absolutely sure this is...
Stepping aside to let Tibor dance with Cicely, Marcus picks up Tibor's cigar.
It's not a waltz, Tibor.
You call it?
It's certainly not a waltz.
Smiling into Tibor's eyes, Cicely suddenly steels herself.
Let's go and play a game.
Cornelius is in the Nettleby Arms.
Is there much shooting then on the estate?
This is Sir Randolph Nettleby's place.
Yeah, some of the best shooting in the country, sir.
The king himself has shot here. Though not so often as his late majesty.
Good God, how ghastly.
No. How's that, sir?
All I know is it's a few bob in my pocket and a good hot meal in the middle of the day.
It's murder!
I'm not stopping here to listen to any of that kind of talk.
Until we recognize our universal kinship with all living creatures, we will remain in outer darkness. In outer darkness!
A group of children hanging around the door of the pub flee as Cornelius steps outside and takes a long look around the village. Then he heads back inside. The other patrons sit in silence as he takes a seat by the fireplace.
Dear me. Well, I hope you gentlemen won't refuse my hospitality.
Thank you, sir.
He collects their tankards.
Gentlemen, indeed.
Meanwhile, at the house. Gilbert's at the billiards table. Leaning over the green baize, he measures the angle, takes the shot, then turns to Lionel.
Can I give you something to think about?
Randolph's watching.
Did I see you with a new pair of Purdy's today, Gilbert?
Yes, indeed. Best guns I've ever had.
Lionel takes a shot.
Made fitment. Nothing like Purdy for smoothness and finish.
Yes, well. Perhaps fit a difficult customer. Find his shoulders off. One eye better than the other, then Henry Holland has the patience and the experience.
But I'd only ever go to Purdy now.
Some of the other guests are playing cards.
Well, I think you've done it again.
Congratulations.
Madame Gardner. I'm afraid I shall have to write you a check.
No, please, Lady Hartley. Allow me.
What a dear man. I can only agree.
Lionel's still at the table.
Cockrell has some very good beginner's gun. Not my first elephant gun, though.
Randolph's totting up Lionel's score.
I imagine you must be pursued by them all now, Gilbert.
Yes, very vulgar.
Now, the only people to whom I'd give unsolicited testimonial are Purdy.
Gilbert raises his eyebrows as Lionel pots another white. Meanwhile, having laid out a line of letters, all torn into three or four pieces, John's writing his own correspondence on a similarly sized piece of paper. Now, in a room in which some of the furniture has been covered in white sheets, Gilbert's sitting alone at a piano. Still wearing his black tuxedo, he seems pensive as he gently caresses the keys. Meanwhile, his wife Aline's in her bedroom, sitting at her dressing table in a nightgown. As the door opens, light from the hall fills the room, casting a shadow of a figure, who enters then closes the door. For a moment, Aline sits, looking over her shoulder. Then, getting to her feet with a faint smile, she casually walks to the centre of the room and stands face to face with Reuben. He takes her by the arms, and she raises a hand to gently stroke his cheek. Then, as they're about to kiss, Aline tilts her head back just as their lips are about to touch. Placing his hands on her neck, Reuben kisses her ever so gently on the lips. Aline runs her hands over his shoulders and arms and looks deep into his eyes, but then turns away again as he goes to kiss her. The next morning, Osbert's wearing a dressing gown as he steps out into the garden, carrying his duck in a cage. Treading across a neatly mowed lawn, flanked on either side by two lines of trees, he heads over to a rectangular pond at the centre of the garden. Then, as he opens the cage, he slips into the pond, and the duck flies off.
Elfrieda! You haven't had your breakfast! Boo.
Watch out. What are you doing?
It's a letter. For me.
A letter.
I want you to read it when you're alone. Now, it's quite long.
Letter serious?
Yes.
Two more, Sue. Oh, no. What is it, John?
You'll see.
Yeah? Thank you. Just put it down there.
Thank you, milady. What does it say?
Read it.
Can't, not until I finish the early morning teas. Master Osbert, whatever have you been doing?
The thing is, I went to feed the duck, and I was just moving the cage so as to let her get some better grass.
You're soaking.
When it tipped, and I fell in the pond. But it will be all right.
Well, what about the duck?
She flew off. She was frightened, you see. She'll come back soon. She hasn't had breakfast.
Listen. Does she come if you call?
Yes. When she can see me.
That'll be all right then. You better run and get dry. And don't let anyone catch her.
Lionel and Olivia are riding.
How I wish we hadn't laughed at Osbert.
But you didn't.
I didn't think it was funny. He has such strong emotions and He'll be educated and taught the ways of the world and made to be on the side of the guns and not the ducks. It seems such a pity.
I suppose we all have to learn to school our emotions to some extent.
Of course, but who invents the rules of manly behavior? Who says it's the height of heroism to kill? For every hero, does there have to be a living sacrifice?
You know, I always knew you had such fire. I just didn't think you'd show it. At least not to me.
I feel I can, because you are a true friend and won't laugh.
No, I won't laugh.
We are being very serious. I think that might be breaking one of the rules. I think it's bad form to be serious.
I'm quite sure it is.
Lionel, do you think he's sound?
Let's have a look.
They dismount.
Thank you.
Come on, Bob.
It's just that having a son of my own has made me aware of how differently I feel from a man. And more, how I would really like to rebel against the world men have made. I see the beauty of a good shoot, of course, but I resist the added solemnity the whole thing gets from that sacrificial note of death, of blood. Why do men have to have that to complete their pleasure?
Nature includes the note of death, of blood. It's all around us.
You don't have to love it and seek it out and long for war so you can have more.
Do we do that?
Have you never wanted a war?
Well, I suppose there's something in every man that answers the call of battle.
There you are, then.
There I am. But I shall not, if I can possibly help it, shoot young Osbert's duck.
That I do believe.
Shall we walk back, then?
All right.
At the house, Randolph's walking downstairs when he hears a call coming from a room.
Jingle!
Practicing his shotgun rotation with his loader, Gilbert's aiming at a bust of Julius Caesar as Randolph enters the room.
Ah, Gilbert. Yes. Yes, I didn't realize it was you.
My dear fellow, do forgive me. I wasn't about to take a pot shot at the Roman Emperor. But with these new guns, I thought my lad and I'd just have a minute to do a drill before we get going.
I wouldn't have thought that you'd made it. Seems to go like clockwork yesterday. Anyway, it wouldn't have mattered. Julius Caesar, I mean. It's just one of those casts. You know, I'll get them at the British Museum. Not that you'd have been loaded. At least I'd help you, wouldn't?
Ellen's sitting in her bedroom, running her eyes over John's letter. She seems troubled by what she's reading. Meanwhile, a car carrying 5 male passengers motors into a field and pulls up. Climbing out, Randolph and his shooting party cross to their loaders, who are all waiting with a shotgun under each arm. In the garden, Lady Minnie Nettleby's walking along a gravel path when she comes across 2 gardeners working the soil.
The asters, shouldn't they be divided?
Best not lift them now, my lady. Not until the spring. They won't thank us for it. Of course, if you insist...
No, no. There's only room for one despot in the garden, Ogden.
Where are you going this morning?
We're going to look for Elfrida Beetle so Osbert can go and get her when he's finished lessons.
And who is Elfrida Beetle?
It's the name they give the duck, milady.
She used to be called Alfred, and then when she turned into a female, she was going to be called Elfrida. But Nanny said it wasn't Elfrida, but Elfrida, and she just wanted a beetle, and L's friends were she.
I see.
She freed the beetle by swallowing it. She freed it from the miseries of life. Elfrida Beetle. Elfrida Beetle. It's a silly name, but it's her name.
And now she's run away.
She'll be back. I never saw such a greedy animal.
Bird.
No need to be pert.
Pert, bird, bird, pert. Perty, birdy, birdy, bird, bird.
Attracted by the shooting, Cornelius steps through a gate, carrying a placard under his arm. Hanging from a post are some of the party's previous kills.
Cads! Unspeakable cads!
Lionel and Gilbert are standing side by side. Each have one eye on the opposition as they fire into the sky.
Stretch ahead, my lord.
Gilbert makes a kill.
All out, Sir Randolph.
15, sir.
To Lionel.
17, my lord.
To Gilbert. Sitting with Minnie, Aline places a lace veil over her face.
Pretty. Nottingham?
Bruges. An old admirer. Sweetest thing. A Norwegian, can you imagine?
Easily. I've always thought your taste in men more Ibsenite than Chekhov.
Oh, Minnie, you are a beast. What shall I do with it, do you think? It's too pretty to put on a petticoat, and there isn't enough for a pair of sleeves.
Oh, you're so clever at that sort of thing. I expect I'd simply trim a bodice with it or something. Haven't you got something being made you could find a use for it?
Well, yes. But I was thinking of not getting in contact with my dressmaker for a month or so.
I'm sure I'm right. Hmm?
I have to be rather elusive with people of that nature for a month or so.
Oh, bills!
My bookmaker, mainly. I've never known a man so stingy with credit.
Well, I could let you have a little something for a few weeks, if it would help.
Oh, Minnie, you are an angel. No, I couldn't possibly.
I can't bear looting my friends.
If only I hadn't had that rotten escort. I can't tell Gilbert because I promised to give up gambling.
Minnie's digging away.
I could let you have it back in a month or so, but Gilbert pays me part of my dress allowance on the 1st of December.
Of course I'll let you have a little something. It's horrid to be worried about money. 100? 2?
Minnie, you are an angel. You are an angel. Could you possibly make it 2?
In a little while, we'll go inside and see if we can find my checkbook. And then, what about a game of whist?
Oh, too divine. As long as you don't make it double or quits.
Ah! There.
Go on, get out of it!
When a deer strays into the hunting area, Tibor's sorely tempted to shoot it, before he realizes that the others aren't interested in killing it. Meanwhile, barely visible through the trees, Cornelius is approaching with his placard. Spying the shooting party, he kneels down and tightens the string, securing a stick to a board, proclaiming, "Thou shalt not kill," in red capital letters.
Enough!
He raises his placard above his head and marches in front of the shooters.
Look out, you fool!
What the hell is that man doing?
Sorry, Booker.
First time I'm over here, Glass.
All right, pull the dogs.
Glass and another man run over to Cornelius, turning him round and leading him by the arm towards Randolph.
You don't approve of our sport, I fear.
It's not my idea of sport. It's my idea of murder.
Yes. It's all right, Glass. We'll go on down to the marquee as soon as this drive is over.
Aye, sir.
Let the gentleman go, Charlie. You've caught us just at the end of our murderous morning. We're about to join the rest of our party for an ill-earned luncheon. Tell me, are you from these parts? I don't think I've ever met you before.
My own work.
He hands Randolph a leaflet.
The rights of animals. A vindication of the doctrine of universal kinship. Oh, yes. Well, these pheasants, of course, wouldn't have been here at all if we hadn't bred them, hatched them, reared them,
One could argue that we give them life, and then after a bit we take it away from them again, abrogating to ourselves somewhat godlike powers. I admit, but don't let's be legalistic about it. This is a very well-produced pamphlet. Where do you get a thing like this printed? Is it expensive? You don't mind my asking you?
Oh, no, not at all. I know a very good printer at Dorking, just near where I live. An excellent man of anarchistic views. He gives me very good rates.
Our special terms. Mm. He wouldn't give me such good ones, I suppose.
Are you a pamphleteer too, sir?
Well, I was thinking of making a sort of foray in that direction.
A polemic, yes. Would you say?
Yes, I think that's the right word.
Would you call it a diatribe?
Yes, I could call it a diatribe, Mr. Cardew.
The ruin of rural England, a diatribe.
Precisely. I don't think we should continue our discussion here. We'll postpone it somewhat. My fellow murderers are a rather hot-blooded lot.
My card.
Ah. Hindhead. How charming. Well, we'll certainly keep in touch, and you will broach the matter with your printer friend.
Oh, we'll send you an estimate without fail, sir. Good day to you.
And I bid you good day, sir.
As Cornelius totters off, an impressed Lionel steps forward.
I suppose you really do have to have him up in front of the bench, do you?
He had to get back to Hindhead. Pretty place, Hindhead.
The women cross a bridge, with Cicely leading the way.
There they are!
Her coltish ways don't give Count Rexy the idea that he's approved of as a suitor.
Well, couldn't we look at him as just a little bit sous le tapis? Just a foot, just a toe.
Her father is against it. He says things are too unsettled at the moment.
But if there were a war, we'd all be on the same side. The royal families could hardly fight each other. And the Rackerseys are wonderfully rich.
An English match would be much more secure.
Well, I suppose all those foreign relations could be a bit of a bore.
Oh, yes. And we can enjoy another year or two of speculating, can't we?
How will Cicely feel about that, then?
Oh, she'll enjoy
speculating, too. She's not like you, my dear, with those high ideals which make you the princess lointaine for so many of your admirers.
We're not all as spiritual as you, Olivia, dear.
That's why we cherish you so.
Oh, most of us are very mundane.
A marquee with wooden floorboards has been erected by a lake. While the women join the men inside, John brings out a steaming pot, which he carries over to the loaders and beaters.
Right, stand back, you lot. Loaders first.
Cicely.
It said the most wonderful things. You wouldn't have believed it.
But what sort of things?
Oh, that she was truth because she was beauty, or beauty because she was truth. And that there was going to be a war, and he was going to gird his loins and fight for her sake.
Do be careful, dear, here.
But really, though, don't you think it's romantic?
Sounds a bit overdone to me. I mean, what would you think, were you to receive such a letter?
I should be fascinated.
And you?
I should feel ashamed. I should know I wasn't worthy of it.
But wouldn't you be secretly just a little pleased?
Ellen was pleased.
See the deer? They've bred before in Bowler's plantation as the bracken up top they like.
Better not let my dad hear you've been up there.
These are hard times for the local people. No one seems to care very much about country nowadays.
But surely the popular idea of England is a village green, wood smoke from cottage chimneys, contented labourers, a benevolent squire.
The reason why that idea is such a powerful one is that it's a myth.
Money.
It hasn't existed for many years.
Is there no way of turning the myth into reality?
It would mean working against the whole current of history.
I wouldn't entirely agree, Randall.
Why are you smiling?
I can't imagine. Except that sometimes when my thoughts about the future are particularly gloomy, I find myself feeling more and more light-hearted. I suppose I've always fancied the idea of taking to the hills when the barbarian hordes overrun us.
think I should enjoy that.
Vandal, lunch is served. Lunch is served.
Well, Minnie would hate that marginally more than I should. She and I will have to stay at home and make friends with the barbarians.
Outside, Tom urinates in the bushes as he and the other beaters and loaders share a drink.
Well, it'd be all right if we could get back, but it wouldn't be worth it.
You know, the landlord is the cause of crime. He invents the laws and invents the punishments for breaking them.
Here, hold it.
Now, if the land belonged to us all, stands to reason there'd be no law of trespass.
Well, belongs to us all. That means belongs to the government. If you ask me, I'd sooner sweat for the buggers I know than for a bunch of bloody politicians up in London.
That's right. Follow the running trust politicians.
That may be so. That may very well be so of most of them, but not Lloyd George. He's the man of the people.
Welshman, isn't he?
What's that got to do with anything?
Oh, we've had some of them round our parts. Welsh miners doing Derbyshire men out of work with their smooth talk. Never trust a bloody Welshman.
Nor a gypsy, nor a Jew.
Beetle! Elfrida! Elfrida Beetle! Elfrida! Elfrida! Elfrida!
Where's Osbert?
Osbert, the widow. Well, I expect by now he's trying to find his duck. The silly thing hasn't turned up. It was lost this morning.
If it should fail to appear, I should feel honored to take on the responsibility of providing a successor.
You're the kindest person in the world.
Exactly. In a perfectly straightforward manner. For a Zulu.
And the Kaiser.
I'm sure Zulus aren't cannibals. Granny told me. Granny, isn't it true that Mr. Adrian Carr was eaten by cannibals?
Well, of course he was eaten by cannibals, poor man.
Elfrida! Elfrida! Elfrida Beetle!
Osbert looks skyward as a flock of geese fly by in formation. In the marquee, Olivia and Lionel look out across the lake.
Wouldn't it be lovely to live here always?
I should like it well enough if I could have my books. And if I were in love with my companion, and if we could keep it warm.
It would have to be an idyll for you, then.
For the...
I don't know that I would ask so much. I could be happy here alone.
That would be a waste.
Of what?
Of you.
I might be becoming wise, then it wouldn't be a waste.
We're meant to share our lives, not develop in isolation. Besides, I think you're wise already.
You can't know me very well if you think that.
Then why do I feel as if I do?
I don't know.
You know me, too. You know everything about me.
That's impossible.
Yes, but it's also true. We recognize each other because our souls knew each other before.
Where?
Oh, in heaven or somewhere. I don't know.
You seem very sure.
I am. Quite, quite sure.
I think it's more
now,
as
what
if...
What did I do with Lorna's leash?
Will you walk with me tomorrow? Well,
yes.
On your feet! We're moving.
Lorna, back to work. Enough of that.
Ah, look alive, boy.
No, let me look.
Dan hands Randolph his sketchbook.
It's only a bit of scribble.
No, you have it to the life. Thank you for sharing it with me. That's a real talent, Glass. I wish you'd let me put that boy through grammar school.
He's happy enough where he is. Why give him ideas of his station?
Oh, well, if you change your mind, the offer is still on. Come on,
as the hunt continues, a steady stream of figures walking across the far end of the forest eventually splits into two groups. Back at the house, a despondent Osbert sitting with his back to a burning fire, his cheeks wet and his head hung low. Ellen looks in on him.
Well, whatever's the matter, Master Osbert? Well, didn't you find your duck?
Oh, never mind, eh?
So
meeting's over for today.
But if she doesn't come back tonight, they'll shoot her tomorrow.
Not if I've got anything to do with it, they won't.
How will you stop them?
She doesn't come back tonight. First thing in the morning, soon as I've done my chores. I'll come and help you find her.
Will you? Will you really?
Promise. They'll have to shoot us before they shoot her. There.
You are a brick, Ellen.
Yeah. I know all about that. Now get a whittle into your fancy dress before her ladyship starts creating, will you?
Osbert steps downstairs in costume.
The captain of the Pinafore!
He peers through a telescope.
Oh, hopeless. Oh, what are you supposed to be then? Little Bo Peep?
That's quite enough from you.
Osbert, you are splendid. Absolutely splendid.
Very good, Osbert.
Who's next?
Is this right? The spirit of ragtime?
You bet!
Crikey!
Cicely in a revealing dress.
Oscar Wilde.
Oh, dear.
Reuben.
Not in the very best of taste.
Pardon.
Who's Oscar Wilde?
He wrote The Happy Prince, my dear.
The Butterfly and a Bumblebee.
Bob and Olivia.
Beautiful.
So she got you into it, eh, Bob?
I'm afraid so.
A wicked highwayman.
Lionel, wearing a black mask and cape.
Why is he wicked? I like him.
A classical tableau.
Marcus.
What's Marcus doing?
He's being a statue.
But she's breathing.
Oh, I give up.
Jerusalem Cavalier.
Oh,
wonderful.
What's he so pleased about?
Himself.
Shut up, you.
La Damo Camelia and Alfredo Gemon.
Just a minute.
Technical hitch.
Perhaps I could help.
I think not.
Oh. Aline comes down the stairs, holding a handkerchief to her mouth, while a grim-faced Gilbert follows, wearing a plain tuxedo.
Is she ill?
No, dear, she's acting. Oh, Gilbert, you might have asked the children. They'd have found you something out of the dressing-up books.
You're thoroughly humiliated.
Well, never mind. We must give away the prizes. It's long past Violet's bedtime. Now, darling, here's a prize for the best dressed lady, and there's a prize for the best dressed gentleman. And, darling, now you must choose.
That's easy. Him and her.
Gilbert and Olivia.
I don't think anyone can quarrel with that. How did you choose, Violet?
Because they're the best.
No particular. And here's a prize for the judge.
Bob.
Yes. Would you like? Yes. Relieve me of that. Gilbert, here's a prize for you.
Ah, kind of you, Ralph.
Are you all right?
Yes, but if you would excuse me, it's nothing a good night's rest one put right, but I should like to do justice tomorrow.
Oh, my dear fellow.
Goodbye.
Good night. It's really rotten. Those terrible headaches.
I've known a lot of men who shoot as much as Gilbert does to be afflicted by the same thing.
Osbert! Violet!
Lord and Lady
Chetwynd!
The Honourable Dora Davis!
Hiding from their nanny, the two children rip open their presents. Violet unwraps a pop-up book, while Osbert discovers a jack-in-the-box.
That's babyish.
They stand up and peer over the balcony, watching as a woman in red twirls across the dance floor.
Yes.
Looking up from her sewing machine, Ellen sees John standing in the doorway.
John Hoskins.
What did you think of my letter?
Tell you the truth? I don't know.
I thought you'd like it.
I did at first. And somehow, ouch.
What?
Well,
All them long words.
Listen.
I need to think about it. And you need to be off out of it before someone catches you here. And we're both up in front of her ladyship and Satchel had a reference between us.
We'll talk about it in the morning.
Not if you don't hop it now.
John stares at her for a moment before leaving. Ellen picks up the letter. She walks over to her bed, sits down and removes it from the envelope. She begins to read.
It's a lot of nonsense. That's what it is. A lot of blooming nonsense.
Lionel's kneeling by a stair railing on a floor above the party when he sees Olivia.
Hello. Look. Osbert's army.
Yes.
She kneels beside him and removes a toy soldier that's balanced on the railing.
Sweet.
She replaces it, then looks down for a moment on the dancing below.
You said, as if.
As if what?
Today at luncheon. Didn't finish. I said we'd known each other before, and you said it was as if...
As if you were my long-lost brother.
That puts me in my place.
I'm so sorry if...
I love you. I love you.
I've been so stupid.
Oh, no.
I thought... It was just that we... liked each other. That we had things in common. And...
She suddenly turns and rushes away, leaving Lionel anxiously considering her reaction. Now, hearing a knock at her door, Aline sprays herself with perfume and gets up to answer it. She pauses to examine herself in a mirror, fluffing up her long, thick hair and running a hand over her chest and waist.
Bitch.
Finally, she opens the door and Gilbert steps in, his hands in his dressing gown pockets.
Gilbert.
I'm sorry, my dear, I didn't mean to bother you. And I wondered if you'd any of those sashes, the ones that the French doctor gave you. My head is agony again.
Aren't they some terribly dangerous drug? You ought to be careful, you know.
Yeah, it's any laudanum or chloroform, I don't know. Anyway, I must have something.
You poor thing.
Having given him a small white packet, Aline retreats to a chaise longue, where she begins to read a magazine.
I could stay a bit if you liked.
My dear, it's not one of our weeks. Anyway, you need rest if you're going to do yourself justice tomorrow. Well, you can't let people think that Lionel Stevens had a better shot than you. You know how people love to talk.
Is that what people are saying?
Well, I don't know what they're saying. Don't look so shocked. You know you've been thinking about it.
Nonsense. What do they say? Well, tell me what anyone has said.
I don't know what they're not saying anything. Don't yap at me, Gilbert.
I'm not yapping. Somebody must have said something, otherwise you wouldn't have thought of it.
Yes, I would. Why not?
You never think about my shooting.
Of course I do. At least I do if I see anyone trying to be as good as you. I may not be interested in everything you do. But I am loyal to you, you know that.
I'll show them. I'll get a good night's rest and I'll show them. You'll see.
You do that. You can beat Lionel Stevens any day, the conceited young fool.
No, I don't think he's that. I'll beat him, though.
He is conceited. And a prig.
You're only saying that because you're becoming bored with Charles and would have liked a flirtation with Lionel, whereas perhaps he has other preoccupations.
That's the sort of bitter remark we agreed never to make to each other.
It wasn't meant to be bitter. I don't feel bitter. I did once, but I'm getting used to it now.
Don't try to sound pathetic. We made an agreement and I have stuck to it. You started it all with that disgusting old hag in Maida Vale.
It's quite usual for men to have distractions which don't affect their devotion to their wives.
My distractions don't affect my devotion to you. I have never been disloyal to you. And I have never let you down in public. Now please go. I'm getting a headache. It must be infectious.
Yes, I'll go.
He looks down at the white packet.
Thank you for the...
He leaves, and Aline, now in her bed, throws down a newspaper in frustration. Next, Tom calls his dog out from his house.
Come on, son. Come on, boy. That's a good boy. Here, son. Here, boy.
He ties the dog to its kennel and gives it an affectionate pat on the back before heading off up a path in the woods. In a dining room, Cicely to T-ball.
Will you really ask me to stay?
I shall ask my mother to ride to yours as soon as I get home.
She can't speak a word of Hungarian.
Nobody does. We speak French.
Her French is quite good,
I think. It is. It's très convenable, according to mademoiselle.
Alors, vous vous comporterez très bien. Nous ferons du cheval, de la chasse même, si vous voulez.
Oh. So we'll be going riding and hunting, will we? So there.
Not bad. In the evening, there will be musicians, and we can dance in the ballroom, all surrounded by Venetian looking glasses. I think you would like to waltz there.
I know I should. You won't forget, will you, when you get home?
No, I won't forget.
Osbert's in the gardens.
Not Frida Beetle.
He's throwing down bird feed.
Alfreda! Alfreda Beetle!
He squats down by the empty cage he's placed on the ground and looks at it forlornly. Randolph's listening to the conversation at the dining room table.
Well, they've been there with us. Well, I was so intrigued because Rashi apparently is going to give up money and go into politics.
Really?
Well, whether or not it's a good idea, I'm not persuaded, but... Of course, you know the Barlows, don't you? At Rothermere, they're such good sorts.
Yes, we were there with the Charlesworths. Of course, you and Olivia had left. I must say, I thought Veronica had been quite dreadful the last time I saw her.
The talk at the club is that Raymond is drinking very heavily again.
Well, he's in the right place, isn't he?
Things to do. I'll move off at about 9:30, I would say. And we could take the duck at the end of the morning, if that would amuse any of you.
Oh, Aline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Fritz, Gilbert?
Very much, sir, thank you.
Good morning, Gilbert.
Good morning.
Well, they are a strange bunch, those gentlemen. I'll say they all look so dagger, don't they? Well, they say they're Cornish. Of course they are, but I think it's the result of Armada survivors. And, too many willing Cornish dames. My dear.
Thank you. Darling, suppose there are some other people somewhere. People we don't know.
What sort of people?
Oh, perfectly charming people, really delightful. Intelligent, amusing, civilized. And we don't know them. And nobody we know knows them. And they don't know us or anybody who knows us.
Well, I'd say it was impossible. But even if it were possible, I don't think I'd want to know such people because I don't think I'd find anything in common with them. Shall you walk with me today?
I'm sorry, Bob, but I promised to walk with Lionel.
No, mind. I've plenty of other opportunities. I wanted to remind you how we ordinary mortals shoot.
It's a sport, Bob. Not a duel we're engaged in.
That's a welcome assurance, Stevens.
Gilbert gets up from the table and strides to the breakfast buffet. Outside, Tom's looking at the sky.
Tom?
Yeah.
Matches?
Good day, Sir Randolph.
Hey, Sir Randolph.
Hey, Sir Randolph.
Briggs.
Sir Randolph.
Sutcliffe.
Sir Randolph.
Rhodes.
Sir Randolph.
We'd best be on our way.
Yeah, my matches.
Are you keeping, Harker?
Oh, can't complain, sir. His mercies are manifold.
Yes, indeed they are. That was a very good piece of work you did on that roof in Hamlingham. I was over there the other day.
Why, thank you, sir. Rooks. My first job scaring them, age of eight.
Uh-huh.
A rook pie. You don't want too much of it.
Sorry, Sir Randolph.
I see you got one of your favorite characters beating today.
Against my better judgment, Sir Randolph. Against my better judgment.
I like him.
Get over there. Wait for me.
Him and me are counting all right. We're going to smash the other fella today.
Here, keep a lookout. Sir Randolph catches you.
Bugger that.
Aline to Gilbert.
I suppose he is really one of the best-looking people one knows.
Oh, who?
Lionel Stevens. He has such a sensitive face. Like Phoebus Apollo turned fasting friar.
What?
George Meredith. In The Egoist. The hero, I can't remember his name. The man she loves, not The Egoist.
No. I don't think what you mean.
Well, you do sound cross.
I am cross. Your friend Lionel Steele's been thoroughly annoying. For some unknown reason, he's setting himself up in competition with me.
Well, you've got all the day to beat him in.
Can't shoot any more birds than I'm shooting already.
Well, you'll have to try a bit harder. Hooch a bit or something. Why not? It's more fun. Let's see why Lionel Stevens should get everything his own way.
Everyone else stands still when we stand still. Then you move forward, taking your cue from Tom and Walter. Now we do the same again three or four times till we get to the end. You can be stopped.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it is favoritism. He may not see shooting like we'll see today, not even if he lives to be 100. Eh?
Yeah.
Right. Everyone clear?
Yeah.
Off we go then.
The beaters fan out and set off into the woods. Lionel standing with Olivia.
What I said last night, I shouldn't have said it. Don't let it mean that you change, that you avoid me.
It's wrong to avoid things or not to recognize them. That was what it was all the time.
All the time.
That is what it was. That is what it is. I love you too.
Mr. Stevens, sir. Over on the left, your bird, sir.
Olivia looks away as Lionel takes his shotgun and fires at the bird in flight. It falls from the air, landing near her feet. She looks up with an expression of sorrow, and tears begin rolling down her face. Gilbert glances over at Lionel before taking aim at his next target, sending it spiraling to the ground. Another bird falls into a small lake. Osbert.
Going to shoot her, Ellen. Going to shoot her.
We'll find her. Don't you worry.
Ellen sits on the ground and removes her boots. She then steps through some reeds at the lake's edge and joins Osbert, who's up to his knees in the water. Gilbert's loader hands him a fresh weapon.
They're 15 ahead now, my lord.
Gilbert glances at Lionel again as he stands talking to Olivia, her hands held in his. The shooting party blazes away and smoke swirls through the air, each man firing almost as fast as his servant can reload. Glass walks behind the line of shooters while Tibor waits for a loaded weapon. Marcus is given his weapon and he empties both barrels at a high-flying bird which plummets towards the ground. All around, pheasants are being shot to the ground with good skill and precision.
Glory be to God.
Glass goes to Randolph's side.
Fall out, Sir Randolph!
As the shooting dies down, Gilbert fires at a low-flying bird.
They've been shot.
He's been shot!
Right. Minister, where you are?
Oh, dear. Gilbert has overreached himself.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Around the injured man.
Oh, keep back!
Keep back! Don't crowd! Come on, out! Right. Out!
I thought it was you. You was Stark, wasn't you?
Tom said one Stark wasn't enough.
My eyes. Don't want to lose my eyes.
I want to hold it. Take these hats away so as to have a look at you.
There you are. Yes.
It's Tom.
Hold this up to your face with your left hand there. We'll get you home.
Who's the fastest runner here?
I am, sir.
Oh, well, you run as fast as you can to Dr. West. Bring him here.
Go with him, Walter.
Can anyone do anything?
I don't think so, sir. I'm going for a doctor.
Oh, God.
Better tell the men to go home, all of them. Nothing I can do here. Oh, get some of them to make a litter, you know. Something to carry
right,
them
sir.
On.
You lot. Off you go home. And the rest of you, come with me.
And Lionel. Tell them that everything is under control here, and the best thing they can do is to go home, except get a message to Patton. Bring the car for a minute.
Righto. My time comes, I'll go away. But I don't want to be a blind man.
No, no, of course not. No. Don't worry. Dr. West will come here soon.
Awful thing to happen.
Randolph turns to Gilbert.
Yes.
It was a woodcock. I'd no chance of getting it unless I swung fast. Of course, I'd no idea that the man was so close.
Tom.
I'll make it all right with him.
Gilbert turns to go.
Financially, I mean.
You weren't shooting like a gentleman, Gilbert.
What do you think you're doing sitting there? We'll need some sacking. You'll find him in the game car.
Is the man badly hurt?
Caught him in the face, sir. Dr. West has been sent for.
Blinded. Expensive.
Most unfortunate. I suppose we'd better be getting back to the house if there's nothing we can do.
Ah, that rope. Come on, bring that one in.
Oh, they're not going to shoot the duck.
Reuben goes over to Aline as she watches the rest of the party preparing to leave.
My dear Aline, a man has been shot in the face. It's not if he's just been peppered, you know?
Oh, the poor creature, they've shot it already. You poor thing, we'll get you another one. It's alive. Of course it's alive. It's tired, that's all.
Like you, my dear. I think she's a survivor.
Osbert walks off, clutching the duck.
Who was the water sprite, pray?
God knows.
I think my place is with our hostess, and yours is with your husband.
Reuben heads off.
You dear old-fashioned thing.
Tom.
Is it getting dark?
Yes, it's beginning to get dark, Tom.
A window. Not a breath of wind. A
dark nights, a dry wind, and you get rabbits. No wind, no rabbits, I always say.
Come on now, Tom. Remember who you're talking to.
I remember. Is it dark?
It's not very dark yet, Tom.
It's dark to me. It's getting dark to me. It's my belief, sir, that the bullet has penetrated the brain. I feel it so.
We shan't have long to wait, Tom. Dr. West must be here soon.
Osbert! Osbert! Who's been hurt? Tom Harker. Who? Who'll look after his dog if he's dead?
He is not dead.
Yes, go to hospital then.
Go home. I'll find someone and make sure they look after the dog.
Promise?
I promise. Go on, run.
Randolph looks down with concern at Tom's bloodied face.
It can't be long, Tom, before the doctor comes. Where's that flask again? Here, Tom.
Tom shakes his head at the taste.
Alcohol never interested me. I've seen too much of it, what it can do to a man.
This is medicinal, Tom.
A smoke, I like. A smoke and a chat is a sociable thing. I've seen too many men brought low by drink or gambling.
Stay quiet, I would, Tom. Relax. That's what you want to do. Don't try to talk.
Not talk, he says. I've all eternity not to talk, haven't I?
Randolph places the cigarette he's lit between Tom's lips, and he takes a puff.
Oh, that's tobacco, that is. Turkish, I shouldn't wonder.
Yes, it's Turkish.
That's fine tobacco, that is. If I'm to go, that's a fine last smoke. It gives me some strength to replace what I feel. Draining out of me.
Mr. Glass.
Tom's face has fallen still. Glass steps away towards where Cicely is standing respectfully a short distance away.
I know it's not really important, but I promised Osbert I'd ask you to make sure someone looked after Tom's dog.
Oh, I'll see to it myself, miss. Tell Master Osbert not to worry.
Give me a prayer, sir. Don't deny me that. It's your way to pray. It is you that orders up the prayers in church. The vicar only prays what prayers you tell him. Even I know that hardly crosses the doorstep of the church from year to year. Say a prayer, sir. I'll say amen.
Amen. All right, I'll say a prayer, Tom, if that's what you want. Almighty and most merciful God, of thy bountiful goodness keep us, we beseech thee, from all things that may hurt us, that we, being ready in body and soul, may cheerfully accomplish those things that thou wouldest have done. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen, I say. Amen. Amen.
I should have stopped you. Such a scene is not suitable for a young girl.
As a matter of fact, there is nothing that is not suitable for a young girl. Not even murder.
Come, Cicely, this was an accident.
Accidental murder, then.
He was only a peasant.
The thing is, you see, that we all knew him.
When you come and visit me in Hungary...
Oh, I think I shall never visit you in Hungary.
Tibor watches as Cicely walks away along the tree-lined path.
Don't stop, sir, I thank you. More prayers.
We could say the Lord's Prayer, Tom, together.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
As it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Give us this daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive them that trespass against us.
Lead us not into temptation, deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever, world without end.
Amen.
O Lord, into thy hands,
my spirit.
Tom suddenly sits upright.
God save the British Empire.
His eyes close and he slumps back.
Tom, it's all right. Is the doctor coming?
The doctor hurries upon the scene and quickly checks for Tom's pulse and listens for a heartbeat. Almost imperceptibly, he shakes his head at Randolph. Randolph looks at Tom's face with sadness as the doctor arranges the dead man's arms across his body. Gilbert stands with his head bowed nearby. Slowly, he turns and walks past four servants who are waiting with an improvised stretcher. They each pick up a corner of the stretcher and walk with it towards Tom's body. Later, more servants accompany those transporting Tom's body. Lionel turns to Olivia.
I could have prevented it.
No.
If I'd refused to join in that absurd rivalry.
He provoked you.
I wasn't as insane as he was. But I was reckless. I was carried away.
Because of what we were talking about.
Perhaps.
Yes. We were talking about something that was impossible, as if it were possible.
It was still true.
Yes. But we have to live in the real world, a world with other people in it.
It is still true that we love each other.
Oh, yes. It is true.
The two stare at each other for a long moment before walking off along the woodland path. Behind them, Glass walks at the head of the sombre group of men transporting Tom's body. As the dismal party trudges on, Randolph appears, bringing up the rear. Now they make their way across a green field beneath a blue, cloud-scudded sky.
Looking across this wasteland where no birds sing, my mind keeps going back to that shooting party at Nettleby. Perhaps it was a premonition. I know only that it was then that, for me, killing of any kind ceased to be a sport. And in this past year, I have done nothing but seek to kill my fellow man before he kills me. Maybe that crackpot Cardew has the last laugh in the end. By loving me, you made me out to be a better thing altogether than I am. So much so that then the strange thought crossed my mind that if you have illusions, perhaps I have them too. And perhaps you are less perfect than I think you. And when I had stopped scolding myself for the baseness of that idea, I thought anyway, my dearest and most adored Olivia, while we can, for as long as we can, oh, let us believe.
Captain Lionel Stevens, MC, killed in action, Ypres, 1944. 1915. Oberstleutnant Count Tibor Rakisse, killed in action, Stolbekvar, 1916. Lieutenant Marcus Nettleby, killed in action, Delville Wood, the Somme, 1916. Lance Sergeant Walter Weir died of wounds, Gallipoli, 1915. Private John Hoskins, killed in action, Passchendaele, 1917.